All right, welcome aboard, everybody. Charles Moskowitz. Thanks for joining me. Michael D. Shaw, my usual guest on Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard. Mike, how are you?
Hey, just great, reborn over the weekend, so raring to go here.
Reborn?
Reborn,
Are
reborn.
you re are you reborn in Christ, or how do you mean that?
Well, of course in Christ, but in any other way.
You're a soldier for Christ. Wonderful.
I mean, I woke up Monday morning and suddenly I had the body of a 25-year-old.
How do you account for that?
I'm not saying what species. Could have been a 25-year-old dog too,
Oh, okay. Before we get started, I want to thank Donut, the host of a YouTube channel of a live stream, Rumble, for having me on as a guest. Really, really good guy. Really good interview. He wanted to discuss my books, and not only did he want to discuss them, but and he's read them, and he actually had copies which he held up.
Whoa.
So yeah, I mean that's pretty good, you know. I mean, usually when people want to talk about a book, they don't have it or they haven't read it. This guy read my books and had questions about things I wrote. So I mean that's the best possible kind of
Yeah.
interview you could get. I mean, it was really, really good. And he just posted it on his Rumble channel. He's going to be posting it on his YouTube channel after he does a little editing. Mainly, I might
Where
have
have I
made a
heard
few,
that before? Huh.
yeah, I mean, I probably made a few comments that are not appropriate for YouTube, and he wants to save his YouTube channel, of course, and I don't blame him. You have to be careful on YouTube, you know. You can't talk, you still cannot talk about the 2020 election. You can't talk about the false flag of January 6th. You can't talk about COVID, and you can't talk about the vaccines. And you can't criticize transgender. I think those are the five no's for
Yeah,
YouTube. There's
pretty much.
probably others. They don't really tell you what, but those are verboten. Anyways, but speaking of which, I had the misfortune of watching MSNBC the other night.
I know,
Ari
so we
Mel
don't have to, right?
Oh my God, Ari Melber. You watch 5 minutes of that thing and you feel your head's gonna blow up. It's so they haven't changed. They're putting aside that they're still Trump obsessed every single hour. I don't know how they do it. They're still pushing the J6 hoax.
Yeah.
They still, I mean, I don't know if this is a good thing because I think that most Americans either don't buy it or don't care. Or if they're really kind of like cranking things up, and we're talking the deep state here, to do some real damage. It's really seems to be the only thing they have. You know, that the all of their lawfare cases are imploding. In fact, the one in Atlanta is actually working in their disfavor. The longer they keep that one open, the more information is exposed about how corrupt the Georgia election system is and how corrupt Raffensperger is. And it's getting to be a real embarrassment for them. And Trump's ahead in all the battleground states. There's even rumors that he might be pulling ahead in New York State because people in New York
Is
are.
that for real? I had heard that. Is that for
I
real?
yes, I think that people in New York are disgusted with the Letitia James and Bragg and this other one, the one with the daughter who's raised $90 million, the judge. And just how corrupt they are and how incestuous they are. They're all working together. Everybody's like trying to get Trump. And I think that a lot of people are getting tired of it in New York. You know, you're always going to have the hardcore cult-like Trump haters who are going to lap it all up, like they do. I don't know how they live with themselves. It's like every night. I mean, they're so, besotten with this rotten ideology. But I think your average New Yorker, even liberals, are starting to break away. They're starting to crash, scratch their heads, including minorities, including younger people, the millennial voters, the you know, people are starting to say, hey, you know, it's like they're not buying this anymore. It's getting a little old, a little frayed around the edges. I mean, when you had to have the governor of New York get up on television the day after they try to hit Trump with a $500 million fine and say to New York developers, don't worry, we're not against you. We love you. Just keep going. Keep doing what you're doing. This has nothing to do with you. This is all about Trump.
Right.
Right? Because developers are starting to say, hey, I don't need this. I'm leaving.
You mentioned MSNBC, and I think what's going on here, which is, I think, good news, is now they're really playing to the hardcore audience. I mean, there is a percentage of people that their entire life is hating Trump. So yeah. I mentioned this before. It's, the analogy is to the late Sam Francis, who was a conservative writer, but then he discovered, and he was getting some people upset. So he discovered that his core audience seemed to be little old ladies who were anti-Semitic and veiled that under a sort of, yeah, no, seriously.
I believe
conservative things. So he kept, if you look at his articles, they kept getting more and more and more focused to that particular core group. And I think that's what's happening in MSNBC. First of all, there's no talent on that network. It's, you're getting to the point with them, the few times I do watch them, where they're just making things up as they go along.
Oh, I know. It's awful. I mean, I can't. The only person there that I think does have some talent and he should know better is Ari Melber. He actually has a brain, and he's, and you could tell that he's not buying the crap that he's dishing out.
But he's still there.
Oh, yeah. And they don't have a choice, because if they pull, look what happened with Ronna McDaniel. I mean, talk about a weak, milquetoast rhino, you know, who's lost consistent elections with the Republicans, and they bring her in. Oh, she won't swill. You know, she's like totally like going in the tank. I mean, Trump did not win the 2020 election. Oh, you know, just she's saying whatever she has to say to kiss up to them and get on their network. And even that wasn't good enough. It's kind of
She still gets kicked out after the first day.
Like, it reminds me of, like, I don't know, when like a Nazi regime or a fascist or a communist regime takes over, and, you know, they bring people in for re-education and they get on their knees. Oh, I do believe in the great leader. And I do. And then they still put them up for execution anyway. But
yeah, well, that was the,
because even they hate a traitor. There's nothing uglier. It's a disgrace.
The firing squad during Stalin's regime, where there were stories where they'd line these people up. Thank you, Comrade Stalin, for putting me to death. You know, I mean, it was, what a cult. And
yeah.
But I have to tell you, and this is going to sound sort of self-serving, but I remember in high school when there were these liberal, good student kids, and they would go on with this same leftist claptrap, but this was really a veneer hiding this really authoritarian bent to it.
Oh,
well,
no.
We need to do this, and we need to get the people to do this, and maybe under the guise of we know better than you smelly masses and so on, but now it's exposed completely. You know,
but I hope that enough people can see it for what it is. I hope it's like I've said in the past, it's like a Wellstone funeral moment. Right. I mean, it's, you know, everybody saw that in the whole country. I mean, just to refresh, Paul Wellstone died in a tragic plane crash. He was a liberal senator from Minnesota, you know, left of center, not a bad guy, actually. He had friends on the other side. But his family was way out on the left, his wife and his kids.
Oh.
You know, they were like communists. And at his funeral, they had like a special service of remembrance for him. There were several Republicans who were his friends who wanted to attend. like I think Trent Lott and possibly Dick Cheney. I think that Bush was president at the time, and they said no. They told them, you're not welcome. Don't come. And then they filmed it, and Bill and Hillary were there. All the left wing luminaries were there. Bernie Sanders. I mean, they were all there. And they went on speaker after speaker with these radical left-wing speeches, and just the whole tone of it. You can see people with their ashen faces and their hate, and the film would show them with their twisted ideas and their sneers and their sick applause and just all of the ugliness and the victimization and all of it. And I think that CNN ran it without commentary, just raw footage. And not CNN, who was C-SPAN. And they just ran it. And the whole country saw it. And everybody was like, oh my God, this is really, I mean, it was repulsive. And it's been said that that turned the tables on any possible victory that year for John Kerry in his run against Bush. It's just, people were so revolted by it that the country had a moment of education. It was like a moment where you lifted up the rock and you saw what was really going on. And I think that hopefully we're having that now. I don't know. I mean, are people waking up to the truly radical nature of this assault? I mean, we have a really good column in the Gateway Pundit today. I'm trying to reach the young man who wrote it. He's a member of the Young Republican Club of New York, which is doing some really good work, in which he does, I think he's a law student, and he writes about how these lawyers that represented President Trump in 2020 and who represented conservative causes, how they're being purged from their jobs. They're being purged from the Bar Association. They're not going to be allowed to practice. I mean, these are respected lawyers who graduated from the, in one case, University of Chicago Law School. He'd been one of the most respected, high-powered lawyers at a law firm where he became partner. And then he takes work with President Trump. Trump asked him, could you investigate whether the election was stolen, right? Now he's being purged. They're going to take away his law license. He's being prosecuted for this. I mean, where is the law profession? Aren't lawyers, I mean, they're saying nothing. It's like there's a dead silence. It shows how radical they've become.
Well, here's what's going on with these professions.
Yeah.
And you can make the same analogy to the medical profession.
Oh, yeah.
Right? The activist people in the field of law, the Bar Association types, are all rabid left wings.
Right.
Right. Now, if you're a successful attorney, what you do is that's part of the landscape. You know, these guys are all lunatics. You don't care. But the problem is it's getting worse, and they're going after guys like John Eastman and so on. So, as I say, it gives me no great solace to have demonstrated finally that these liberals were always a bunch of Nazis under a small veneer. But unfortunately, one of two things has to happen, right? In the case of the American Medical Association, it changed to where almost no doctors actually belong to it. And they've become essentially an agency of the federal government regarding reimbursement schedules and so on. In the case of the Bar Association, on the one hand, most lawyers don't care about it, but they have way too much power, because the difference between medicine and law is AMA has no particular responsibility over licensing. Mm-hmm. The problem is the licensing boards in most states are ultra left wing in the medical field. Unbelievable.
And they can take somebody's license away if they don't like your politics?
Well, they will attempt to do that. I mean, I know
they are attempting to do it. They're attempting to, John Eastman and this other guy, Clark, they're facing, and Cheeseborough, he's the third one. these are all lawyers who are facing, severe disciplinary actions and prosecution simply because their client, I mean, Giuliani is another one, of course. Their client was Donald Trump, the president of the United States, who asked them to represent him, who asked them to investigate. I mean, is that, and they're ending up being purged for that? I mean, this other guy, Lynn Wood, or whatever his name, he probably deserved it. but I mean, most of these people, I mean, Sidney Powell, you know, she was a lawyer. I mean, she represented Lieutenant General Michael Flynn. They're all being prosecuted. Ellis, right? Yeah. These are lawyers who are doing their job, representing clients, and their careers have been destroyed. They've been called into these Nazi-like, you know, sensitivity sessions where they have to like swear in public. I do believe that Trump lost. Yes, I do believe that there was a quote insurrection. I mean, and if they don't do that, then they're going to be sent to the gulag. And that's literal. I mean, these people are being threatened with jail. What kind of a country is this?
Yeah, well, all right. For those who could see it coming, again, no great surprise, but you have to realize most people, how can I put this? A great number of people are atheists. And what happens is then they have to replace God with institutions and the government and so on. So remember that on the first day of kindergarten, the very first thing you learn is how to take orders, how to follow instructions, all right? And believe me, you're not going to do very well if you think the teacher's an idiot or whatever, even if he is, and many of them are. So if you're, as what I would call an A student, you're going to play along, you know what's going on. But if you're a B student or lower, this is what you're learning. So it's very, very difficult for people to accept the fact that the institutions have been vastly corrupted. I don't care whether it's the CDC, the DEA, the entire criminal justice system is a sick joke. Mm-hmm. It has been for a very long time, but who wants to face that?
Well, you know, these lawyers that I just mentioned, I mean, these are not stupid people. They're not naive. They are standing up. They're courageous. They're heroic. Yeah. They know how corrupt it is. And they're standing up. And you've got to have people like that. I mean, they're standing in the breach. We have doctors like that, right? We talked about them. Talked to Robert Malone. Talked to Peter McCullough. I mean, these guys, and they've all been proven correct now. Even the CDC is now admitting that the vaccine is a load of crap, that it's dangerous, and it's not a good idea to give it to children. I think that they're, or at least they're admitting by deletion, that ivermectin
They're admitting by deletion.
Ivermectin would have saved 80% of the people who died during the so-called pandemic, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about this. This is much worse than going after lawyers and putting people in jail. This is killing people. I mean, this is like responsible for genocide.
Well, public health has a real long history of killing people. The Tuskegee experiment, which they only admitted to in the mid-1970s, where they're injecting black men with syphilis, But here's the thing, and I've had these conversations and you would not believe it. You go into a whole litany of abuses, and then the response from the other side is, but it's the FDA.
Like, so they just passed the buck. They passed the buck to some agency that is made up of faceless bureaucrats who have been given sovereign powers. We have no idea who's in it. We have no idea whether they're even American. It doesn't matter. And who have this protection. I think a lot of the problem in the medical industry started in the 1980s when Congress gave them immunity the drug companies and the medical industry from prosecution in the case of malfeasance. Then they, you know, this is when you had the explosion of vaccines of children, and you know, like dozens of vaccines when before they even leave the hospital. I mean, it, you know, I mean, we've talked about the fact that it goes back to what the government did about DES. That's a whole big subject. But you know, they basically would give you a few bucks to shut up, and they would the doctors would all have immunity. So, you know, they're all in on it. There's a huge amount of money. And I think that generally speaking, people are developing a healthy distrust for these great institutions, in which case they're then called anti-American. They're against the democracy. Right?
Yeah. But the problem is, it's a long, hard lesson. All right. People like you and me are going to conclude what we see with our own eyes. Mm-hmm. Hey, you know what? If all this crap is going on, then this is a bad institution. And by the way, here's the tragedy of it. There are many good scientists at the FDA. The problem is the management of the FDA has been corrupt for at least 30 years, probably longer. All right. And if you're a scientist there, you're doing your job. And, you know, the most famous FDA case of how they saved our lives on thalidomide, with Dr. Francis Kelsey fearlessly going against the bureaucracy, that would never happen today. Mm-hmm. That woman would have been so shut down and shut up, you cannot believe it. It would have made your head spin. So, yeah, that's a true story. By the way, the drug was probably going to get approved, but for the birth defects coming out of Europe. But that story would never occur in today's FDA, not on your life. Okay.
It's completely bought and sold. I mean, it's a collusion between them and the big drug companies. And I would argue it's more sinister than that. It has to do with population control.
Oh, of course.
You know, it's a.
But that's a conspiracy theory. Right?
Yeah. It is a conspiracy. It's a good conspiracy theory. It's not a bad conspiracy theory like the one that claimed that Putin conspired with Trump to steal the 2016 election. That's a bad conspiracy. Look, the CIA, I'm listening to this podcast. It's two guys who are former CIA agents. It's pretty good. I mean, you know, they're kind of normal. You know, they're playing ball on the other side. However, if you know how to listen to these things, you can learn a lot and you can glean a lot. And they talk about plausible conspiracies. They say that the CIA and the intelligence agencies in this country and around the world, they're in the business of creating conspiracy theories. That's what they do. That's their job. You know, they want to create the illusion that something is happening. So the people look over here. It's like Three Card Monty. Look it over here. Boom, boom, boom. And then they're doing something over there. I mean, that's what their job is. They create these deceptions. And it's in a way, like during a war, you always have this. You know, the Dulles brothers, for example. The Alan Dulles was one of the major operators in the OSS during the war, operating out of Switzerland. And toward the end of the war, he created a conspiracy theory that he convinced the Germans to surrender Austria. And they did. But the whole thing was concocted. But the point is that that's what you do during wars. And it probably saved a lot of lives. A lot of people put down their arms. And there were, you know, it reduced the necessity for more war. It probably reduced the years of the time that the war took place. All sides do this. That's just part of what you do. It's disinformation, if you will. I mean, so, you know, conspiracy theories are conspiracy theories. It's supposedly the job of the media to try to examine and investigate and try to find out what's real and what isn't, you know, but of course, they're all part of it now, have been for a long time.
Well, yeah, Operation Mockingbird. Well, I mean, you make a good point.
Yeah.
The disinformation, the CIA was very, very good at. Intelligence, not so much. They would love for you to forget that no one there predicted the fall of the Soviet Union. I mean, what a failure.
I mean, they did not see that coming.
Right. No. And what's hilarious about that, how many agents do you think they must have had in the Soviet bloc? All right.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
riddled with
that.
That
was a failure beyond reason. Okay.
Let me just interject something on that one, because I've always heard from people, friends of mine on the so-called right, if you will, of the theories of Alexei Galitsyn, I think his name is, or Yevgeny Galitsyn. He was a KGB agent who defected in the late 1970s. Actually, was given asylum by Jimmy Carter. And there was another one as well, Bezmenov, I think. And they were basically saying, their thesis is, the Soviet Union is going to appear to implode maybe 5 or 10 years from now, but they're not really going to implode. It's all just a facade that they're actually going to continue. It's just another trick, and they're going to continue marching forward. Now, I don't subscribe to that theory. I don't think, who knows, maybe they were doing disinformation. Who knows? But I know a lot of people of goodwill on the right do believe that.
Well, you have to look at what happened.
Right.
I mean, they lost their entire empire.
They did. Yeah, and I agree with you.
So, I'm just asking myself, and people don't always like connecting the dots. How many, pick a number, hundreds of CIA operatives must there have been in the Soviet Union? Thousands.
Exactly. I'm sure there is.
So you have all this intelligence, supposedly, and you don't see this.
And I'm sure that there are thousands of them working here, certainly of China.
Yeah.
China obviously has their offices at every college campus, right? The Confucius clubs.
Yeah.
Where they basically spy on Chinese students and they keep them in line.
Yeah.
And do other surveillance. I mean, there were those balloons and all of this business. So, you know, that's something that's a given. But the point is that one of their jobs is to manufacture these conspiracy theories to make people think that something is happening over here when in fact it's something else. And I think that also since World War II, they have gotten very deeply embedded into cultural institutions as a way to manipulate people. I mean, MK Ultra comes to mind. Who is it? Dr. Julian West from UCLA, handing out LSD packets and right and doing like experiments, and this Dr. Ewan Cameron from McGill up in Canada, doing like literal experiments on people in his hospital, you know, using like mind control and dissembling personalities and creating multiple personalities.
But do you remember in the case of Cameron, he was highly regarded for quite some time.
Sure.
Until all this came out.
And you had the sexologist, Dr. Edward Money, I think his name was. He was a New Zealand
John Money.
John Money. He was experimenting on, sex change. That was his, he's the father of
that. He was the original transgender guy.
He was. And I think there was a case where these twins, he was treating these twins, and one of them, they're both male. One of them, he said, well, this is actually should be a girl. And the parents went along with it to an extent. I mean, he wanted to do surgery. He wanted to remove his penis. And the parents drew a line on that. They said no to that. But nevertheless, they brought him up as a girl. They did hormones. They did, different probable surgeries, who knows what. And he didn't realize that he was not a girl until he got a little older. And when he found out, he went after Money with a gun, showed up at the hospital, at his office. But the point I'm making is that Money was behind these sorts of experiments that are now normalized.
Yeah, pretty sick.
Yeah.
But here was the other thing, too, that And your friend, the late
Judith Reisman, yes. Mm-hmm.
When she exposed Kinsey, and recently, over the past few months, Peter Bregan and his daughter have this Substack, and they were essentially republishing some of Reisman's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there were questions, and one of the comments was, well, how do people go along with this crap? And I posted, this was interesting, I posted a comment that was liked by Bregan and his daughter that said, it's very hard for you to believe now, but back in the 1940s, people had absolute trust in academics. Right. You know, these were the elite. These were the people that knew what was going on. And if you came from some university, that was the gospel.
Yes. Right?
And indeed, there's still at University of Indiana, I think. There's still stuff there named after Kinsey.
Oh, yeah. And they still keep his porno collection under wraps. You can't see it. I mean, apparently it's one of the biggest porno collections in the world. and nobody's allowed in. And they still have his institute and his doctors. And in fact, there was a movie made about him with Liam Neeson that I actually saw it and I thought it was pretty accurate. It showed how he was like conducting these classes and how he was instructing people about sexuality and just how clinical everything was, how amoral it all was. There's no such thing. The idea of a romance, of a love relationship, of marriage even, that these things are anachronisms that need to be overthrown.
Right.
And that, you know, the ultimate, I mean, it's very consistent with the communist vision that's articulated by Alexandra Kollontai in her book, The Worker Bees, where she talks about winged eros and unwinged eros. Winged eros is the bad kind because it involves a personal relationship, love relationship, where you care about the other person and where you actually have values. That's bad because that's bourgeois and because that involves property and it involves inequality. Unwinged eros, on the other hand, that's the ultimate goal. That is where sex becomes as normal and as quick and as natural as drinking a glass of water, as she said. It shouldn't have any values connected to it whatsoever. It's just like, and this is the ideal because this is how it exists in the animal kingdom. So, you know, it's a Sigmund Freud talked about polymorphous perversity as one of his concepts, which is basically the ideal of human happiness and human, the height of human success is that you can have sex with anyone at any time, in any condition, and in any means you want. And then there's no value attached to it. There's no relationship attached to it. It's all just one, you know, ongoing orgy. And you know, that's the ideal. Because otherwise, you have hangups. There's something mentally wrong with you. You have emotional problems. You've been preconditioned by false, as Marx would say, false consciousness. Marx viewed anything that stood in the way of his demented vision of an international ant colony as consisting of what he called false consciousness. And, you know, something that made you an individual, that made you unequal. Things like property, faith in God, family, you know, nationhood, you know, free trade, all these things are forms of what Marx called false consciousness. They were invented. This is the grand conspiracy theory of the left. And this is the underlying conspiracy of the left today, that these things need to be eradicated over time because they are retarding us from growing into our universal mind, you know,
but,
Godhead.
But only for the little people. Only right. For the little people. The elite will still have all the advantages.
No, yeah, absolutely, of course. I mean, a perfect example of that is if you take a look at any communist dictator, they are richer than the most wealthy American corporate head, maybe with the exception of people like Bill Gates. But, you know, like if you look at like the lifestyle of Fidel Castro or Daniel Ortega or Mao Zedong, These guys had everything they wanted. Technically, they didn't own anything because it had all been expropriated from the masses when their government took over. But they have all the bourgeois affectations or everything they could possibly dream of as a reward from the little guy because of their great and glorious move into the sunlit future. You know, they deserve it. It's like what they have coming to them. And that it's not ownership because they don't technically own it. They just have it.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Fidel Castro as a perfect example. I mean, Arafat was another one. You know, billions of dollars in bank accounts and everything he could possibly want. These three Hamas heads living in Qatar, each of them is worth a couple of billion dollars. They don't give a damn that they have their operatives and their militants hiding behind women and children as they try to kill Israelis, and then they get killed in return. They don't care about the people there. You know, they're like in another world.
So then the question comes up, how come people don't see this? They believe in the cause so fervently that they're willing to accept all this.
I don't know how to explain that. I mean, I do think that there is a degree of brainwashing going on. They've always known how to manipulate the masses, going all the way back to the days of idol worshipers. And I think that those abilities to manipulate the masses and to manipulate emotions have advanced, especially since Hitler and World War II. Hitler was a master at that. The Nazis patented incredible mind control techniques, you know, and it's all on display. And I think that those things have been imitated ever since by the Soviets, by the American, you know, Anglo-American establishment. And they are means by which mass emotion can be manipulated by informally controlling the media, the means of communication, as Marx called it. What we're told is true. I mean, a perfect example of that is the 2020 election, right? We all saw what happened. Anybody watching television saw it in real time. They're going to tell us what we saw. And they're going to criticize us for thinking that we saw something. You know, you didn't see this. It's over here. And, you know, and anybody who doesn't agree, they use a few. It's like the Portuguese auto da fé, you know, to keep, you know, the Jews in line and the Muslims, by the way, where they would pull somebody out and they would have them sacrificed, publicly humiliated, and then sacrificed in public to let everybody know that they'd better fall in line, whether you're Jew, Christian, or Muslim, by the way. It's not even, the Jew is just an example. I mean, it's sort of like we're in control here. We decide what is true. We decide what is real. And this is what happens when someone dissents from that. Now they're doing it with the guys who are in the Washington, D.C. gulag. You know, they're all like, and by the way, one of them is coming on my show next week. Lang, he's going to be calling in. I'm looking forward to it. You know, they're all carted away, put in solitary confinement where they're not charged with a crime. They're tortured. They're beaten. One guy has already lost an eye because he was beaten so heavily. And it's all like, oh, you know, American people. And whatever happened to the ACLU? Whatever happened to all these liberals? I mean.
Oh, okay. You know what happened to the ACLU.
Oh, my God.
It was founded by a communist named Roger Baldwin.
Yes.
So they were in favor of civil liberties for the left.
Exactly.
But what you're saying is depressing in the sense that even though there are alternative sources of news, you're saying that the mind control just kept up with it.
Right.
So I would always ask, how in the world were they able to hide what a scumbag FDR was? Because here's the guy who was paralyzed, but they were still, you know, getting it on with anything in a skirt. obviously with a lot of help. But here's the point. How did they suppress all that? Well, there was barely radio back then.
Right.
And people, again, had this stupid loyalty to their leaders, which, to be honest, I've never understood. I was never like that as a kid or anything. I knew when to keep my mouth shut. But if I saw a teacher who was an idiot, I didn't suddenly go, oh, yeah, he's a genius. You know, I knew when to shut up. But apparently, and the sad part is, and I've written about this numerous times, that people need to have faith in these institutions. I don't know why. I mean, you think after all the misfires with COVID, people would be up in arms against public health, but I haven't seen it.
People are willing to turn a blind eye to a lot of things. I mean, you know, in my psychology class recently, we talked about how in the case of crimes, sometimes someone's testimony about what they witnessed can prove to not be true, even though they thought they saw it.
Right.
Because even visuals, even what you see can be subjected by what you know, like bias, like what you want to see. You can actually see something and not see it because it doesn't fit into your bias.
Well, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
Your senses, and people have to understand this, your eyes are not just a camera. Your ears aren't just a microphone, because in the middle of that is your brain, which acts on this data in a certain way. So absolutely, if you're an eyewitness of a crime, it's not the same as having a video feed. It's colored by your emotions and many other things.
And I think it's become, that's something that they can then manipulate. And I mean, going back to it, that's a perfect example is the election night 2020. People saw what they saw. Anybody who stayed up late that night, and I did, they saw it. Even you could see, I mean, that the media, certain people in the media, I actually think that Rachel Maddow, of all people, was more honest than Fox News. And because I was flipping around to each of the stations, and she was there scratching her head like, what? All the polls are suddenly closed in 6 states at once?
Yeah.
They've stopped counting? And she even said, you know, before she kind of got a grip on herself, like there's always a little moment when the truth comes out. She says, something hinky is going on here. Yeah. You know, then of course she got, wait a minute, you know, what am I saying? You know, then she kind of got wind, you know, right? Got back under control and realized, hey, yeah, that's right. I mean,
but there was a moment.
There was a moment of truth where it all kind of spills out for 2 seconds.
Because if you reacted in real time, there was no way that you didn't see what was going on.
Everybody saw it. The whole country saw it. It happened. It was like the Kennedy assassination. They shot him down like a dog in broad daylight in the middle of a major American city. Everybody saw what happened. Now, we're told what we thought we saw. You know, we're told, like, oh, no, you know, this was just some nut, low nut, you know, all that. But everybody knew something. You know, they knew what they knew. I mean, there was enough people who did see, and everybody, it was kind of something that was obvious that there was something seriously bad going on.
But here again, how many people were fairly willing to accept that some loser with a mail order rifle arranged to be up at the top of the Texas Book Depository and got off, and he alone got off all those shots. You, at the very least, you think, wait a minute, this is going to take some planning. This is going to take some logistics. Yeah. But people pretty much.
I always thought it was strange that they, that they did it so out in the open like that, so publicly in the middle of a parade. I mean, if they want to knock somebody off, you know, there's certainly a lot more discreet ways to go about it.
But you know, why be discreet?
Well, that's the question. There must have been something more to it than just simply killing the president. I mean, it was like a kind of a declaration that we're in control here. You know, watch out because you're next. This is a new regime. A new wind is blowing in America today.
Well, how new is it?
It was like that they had the hubris to step out and be very open at that moment. And
you mean as opposed to the car accident that killed George Patton?
That killed who?
George Patton, the general.
Yes, that's right. And that was another one. But, you know, and I mean, you're right. I mean, that was obvious.
Now, that wasn't on national TV.
I wrote about that in my book of American Assassinations.
Yeah.
And they still didn't kill him. And he was in the hospital. And he called his wife and he said, get me the hell out of here. They're trying to kill me. And she rushed over. By the time she got there, it was too late. I mean, that's right. I mean, that's not new.
Well, it wasn't as broad daylight as the JFK assassination.
Right. That's right.
But there were a lot of people that witnessed that car accident. And,
this has always gone on. I mean, we could go back to, in my book, I cover the, you know, various presidents and leaders who have died under questionable circumstances. I mean, Zachary Taylor, the president of the United States, I think he was assassinated.
Yeah.
He was standing in the way of this agenda to rip the country into a civil war. They had to wait 10 more years before they pulled that off. I mean, I get into that in my book. It's an interesting story. So sure. I mean, assassinations.
Now which book is that?
Assassination in America.
How old is it?
I wrote that, I think, in 2016, 2015, around that time.
Oh, wow. Okay. I must admit, I'm not familiar with that one.
Oh, yeah. And I got into the Clinton death list.
Yeah.
And the list of people who died after the Kennedy assassination. You know, a lot of things that need to be investigated. I talked about the death of Tim Russert, which I thought was questionable. Did you know that Tim Russert, just before, about maybe, I don't know, maybe it was a year before he died, he interviewed both John Kerry and George Bush, and he asked both of them about Skull and Bones on national television. Now, I don't mean to be I'm putting the tin hat on here, but they both answered his question. Because they were both members.
Yeah.
And he was like, what is this deal with Skull and Bones? You're both in the secret society. What can you tell us about that? And they both had the exact same expression when they answered. And they both said, oh, well, we can't talk about that because that's a secret. But what it did was it brought up to the whole country. And most people did not. You and I would know this, but most average people didn't. The normies. That there was this secret society at Yale called Skull and Bones, and that they're involved in some rather sinister behind-the-scenes stuff, and that they have huge influence over American life. And it's been rumored that he died under questionable circumstances about a year later. Anyway, you know, these things need to be, I'm not saying that he might not have died of natural causes, even though he was a relatively young man. But when there is a situation like that, you have to investigate. That's all I'm saying. You have to take a look at possibilities. Why would this happen? Who would benefit from it? What kind of a motivation is going on here?
Well, who's investigating the suicide, quote unquote, of that Boeing whistleblower?
No, right in the parking lot, right after before he was going to testify. He was a man who had something on Boeing. He was, had been a 20-year employee of Boeing. As is most often the case, he said to his wife, I think he said to his friends, he goes, look, I'm fine. I am not suicidal, but don't be surprised if something happens to me. And if it does, it was not suicide. And then sure enough, he commits suicide in a parking lot.
Right.
Exactly. And we could talk about other cases too. I mean, that doctor who invented the test kit, Nobel Prize winning. There's a lot of people in medical profession who have died under questionable circumstances. You know, there are people who are.
Well, you mean Corey Mullis?
Yes.
Yeah.
They are threatening to expose an agenda that where a lot of money is involved, a lot of careers are involved, and, you know, they have to be stopped for that reason. And the people who do this understand that it's perfectly justified. Look, this is nothing new. I mean, this is what happened to Julius Caesar. I mean, it's not, right? I mean, this is human nature. I mean, conspiracy is part of life. You have, when you have interests and that control or that influence the future of the culture, that influence financial issues, you know, and that they may deleteriously stand in the way of an establishment. Of course they may be assassinated. Why would they not be? I mean, it's obvious.
Yeah, I think the trouble is that most people are very uncomfortable with this concept because it's much easier to just regard it, all this stuff as conspiracy, and no one would do that, and people are generally good, which unfortunately they're not. But, you know, I keep coming back, and it has a lot to do with how society has become secularized to the extent that you have to worship these agencies. And then they all become out of control. How come no one ever asked the question with Governor Kathy Hochul, which she took over Cuomo.
Yeah.
So an obvious question that I didn't see anywhere in the media, left, right, center. Okay, babe, what were you doing when Cuomo was messing with these women? Like,
I mean, Cuomo is not one of my favorite people, but I do think that there were interests that wanted to railroad him.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, he and bringing up those sorts of accusations seems to be an easy path. And obviously those sorts of accusations have been brought up against men who really, you know, where it's really not the case or they're very flimsy. You know, the perfect example is Blasey Ford, right? Anybody who saw that testimony against Kavanaugh, I mean, talk about the left concocting this. I mean, you know, you could tell that she was unstable as a person, and you could tell that something probably did happen to her in high school, but you could also tell that it wasn't Kavanaugh. She wasn't in any way able to, the lawyer that questioned her brought that up and pointed out that she could not locate anything near remotely like where Kavanaugh socialized. I mean, it was a different crowd. She was part of this sort of upper crust Protestant Yankee, you know, private school crowd, where he was more of a blue collar Catholic guy who was in, you know, private school, but it was not, you know, it was more like the Boston College High School kind of school. And they just didn't travel in the same social circles and they weren't there. I mean, they couldn't place her there. And once that lawyer started zeroing in on her, she just picked up her can of Coke and she literally ran out of that room and she never came back. I don't know if I watched this. It was really sensational.
And I don't think a whole lot was made of that.
No, because she had sponsors. I mean, she was put up there the same way Anita Hill was put up.
Yeah.
They promised her, Anita Hill ended up becoming a tenured professor
University of Oklahoma.
At Brandeis in Boston, where she is.
Oh, it's
now.
Brandeis.
Yeah. And she's the head of diversity, divestment, and anti-Semitism and racism, or whatever the hell the office is. She was just a low-level bureaucrat at Thomas's agency. And they just found her, they groomed her, they brought her in, they made her promises to do this. And afterwards, she was getting $10,000 a shot to speak at colleges. She wouldn't go unless they paid her up front. And then she, of course, got a big book deal. And then she got her 10, you know, she was awarded for this. I mean, I think that Blasey Ford also was awarded for coming up with this kind of assault. And in these cases, it's a very flimsy assault. It has no basis to it. It's like this rotten woman who claimed that Trump, right, attacked her at Bergdorf Goodman, really?
Eugene Carroll.
The only reason why she gets away with that is because it's Trump. I mean, that would never have been inside a courtroom if it had been anyone else. And she was financed by Reid Hoffman over at LinkedIn. She had to admit that finally under oath. You get some big money people who have an agenda, and they find these people and they groom them and they put them up to conduct these things. I mean, even Stormy Daniels, apparently, I mean, I this isn't on YouTube, so I think I can repeat this because it's been written about in the Gateway Pundit, is my source. She and Michael Cohen, who were having an affair, Michael Cohen being the rotten convicted criminal lawyer and liar and known perjurer, who apparently gave her the hush money without Trump even knowing about it. They were recruited by Adam Schiff, that rotten guy who came up with the perfect phone call. Whistleblower who had never heard the phone call and who spent 3 years getting his fat face on television talking about how Trump stole the election with Putin. And I have the proof in my upper pocket. He never showed it. He recruited them to bring back that charge again and to go before this judge, not Merchan, whose daughter is a consultant that represents left-wing politicians, including Adam Schiff, who contracted her company to the tune of $20 million. So the daughter of Marchand.
What was the crime? Anyway, I mean, Trump let's had, say.
The crime is absurd. I mean, that Trump used campaign money to pay a prostitute. You know, it's just so ridiculous. And so the whole thing is concocted. I'm sure he probably, if he had anything to do with it at all, and I have a feeling he didn't, but even if he did, I'm sure he wrote the check out of his own account. I mean, you know, it's just ridiculous.
And yet these things have standing because
it's corrupt. I mean, yeah. The father is in the father of this woman who's got $90 million as a consultant from left-wing Democrat candidates who are raising the money because they've hired a consultant whose father is going to put Trump in jail and who has on her Twitter account as her emoji a picture of Trump behind bars. She took that off Twitter once it was exposed by Laura Loomer. That they're making money. His family is getting rich from this case. And yet they know they can get away with it because they know that they have Trump hatred. And they've got this whole rotten leftist, internationalist, illuminated establishment behind them. So they can get away with it. And that this Marchand can put a gag order on Trump while Stormy and Michael Cohen are raking in money going on TV and doing documentaries, all as they crap on Trump. I mean, the whole thing.
That this is with the full faith and credit of the, quote, Republican opposition.
Oh, yeah, well, sure. They're not saying anything. I mean, where's Mitt Romney? Oh, my God. I mean, forget it. Liz Cheney. I mean, talk about rotten Romney. Republicans.
Where's anybody? Besides Marjorie Taylor Greene.
I mean, she might occasionally give a little lip service. But I mean, you got somebody like a Liz Cheney. She actually, while she was on that phony committee, she's sitting on evidence that would have easily exonerated Trump from any involvement. And they basically suppress that And then when they have to dissolve the committee because the Republicans won the election, they're destroying that evidence. There's rumors that they actually destroyed it. She should be in jail for that. I mean, aren't they trying to put Trump in jail just for simply using the Presidential Records Act to take documents out of the White House, like every president has done since John Adams? I mean, this is that's unbelievable. And now it's come out that according to Special Prosecutor Robert Hur, who looked into Biden's stealing of documents, and he had no such coverage. He didn't have the Presidential Records Act. That didn't apply to vice presidents.
Right.
There's still information that he's not been able to get to, they say, at the Biden Center, because he thinks, or at least somebody in his office has leaked, that it's because that has the complaint that was lodged by Tara Reid against Biden. So he needs to cover that up. He took that with him. He stole that out of the files. Anyways, now that I've got all this off my chest, Mike, what do you have coming up on your Substack?
All right, well, I did a few days ago another one of these Whatever Happened To.
Cool.
I was talking about civil rights. I've got something else that I'm working on, commenting on a pretty good article that was posted on The Remnant, which is a conservative Catholic site.
Cool. I'll look it up.
So there's stuff going on, but there's certainly no shortage of things to write about and complain about.
Yeah.
But how much of this it goes on because there's no Republican opposition?
Oh, it's awful. And this guy Johnson has turned out to be a complete dud. I'm sorry. What a disappointment. What an empty suit. He looks like Howdy Doody. I mean, it's ridiculous. He looks like Alfred E. Newman from Mad Magazine.
Yeah, total disappointment.
Yeah, completely.
And
the religiosity and his pounding the chest with that makes it even worse. Because we had at least had an expectation that maybe he was a little bit independent. Maybe he answered to God and not to these rotten characters. It's just
Look, as long as people can say with a straight face that Joe Biden is a devout Catholic, then these labels don't mean anything.
Oh, I know.
Because
really,
you'll be judged by who works here.
Meanwhile, he uses the occasion of Easter to declare transsexual visibility day. I love Trump's response to this. He goes, election day is going to be Christian visibility day. I hope. Let's pray. Anyway, Mike, as always, thanks so much for joining me.
Always a pleasure. And, I really don't feel as bad as I should based on all the stuff we discussed. So,
no, I feel better for getting it off my chest. That's what this is all about. All right.
We will see you next time.
You bet. All right.